Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome to Beyond the Matrix, here on Israel News Talk Radio. Unplug, strap yourself in, because you are about to move beyond the matrix.
It's a wonderful day to be alive, and you're listening to Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio. I'm Rod Bryant, along with my amazing co-host, who is on fire today in many different ways.
Literally.
We won't go into the details, but he's on fire today. And Jerry Gordon has scored an amazing guest. I'm really excited about us talking to Rabbi Jonathan Hausman. Why don't you do an introduction to who this guy is? Because I'm going to tell you guys, you don't want to turn the dial, go somewhere else. You need to actually share this podcast with as many people as possible. Why don't you go ahead and share?
Rabbi Jonathan Hausman is a native of Bridgeport, Connecticut. He serves currently as a rabbi at Havat Torah Congregation in Stoughton, Massachusetts, liberal land, and yet he is revered across the United States and Canada as one of the free-thinking, conservative rabbis of our time. He's also a vigilant free speech advocate. He's had noted international speakers on these topics. He's fluent in English, Hebrew, and Arabic. He went to the American University in Cairo. He speaks fluent Egyptian-accented Arabic, and he's also been witness to the atrocities of the Muslim Brotherhood and persecution of Coptic Christians. He's got more degrees than either Rob and I have.
Or the thermometer in my kitchen.
That's correct. He's got a B.A. in Religion and Judaic Studies and an M.A. in Middle East and Jewish Studies from George Washington University in our nation's swamp. And he received his J.D. from Emory's University School of Law in Atlanta, Georgia. He actually got his smicha from the Tefereth Israel Rabbinic Yeshiva in New York. And with that, we're going to explode.
And we are going to explode to a great show, so don't go away. And listen, you want to hear this, because this very eclectic rabbi, who's very conservative, very outspoken when it comes to free speech, is also being involved in an activity that most people wouldn't think that a rabbi would be involved in, but he is. So don't go away. Stick around. You're listening to Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
This is Shai Ben-Tekoa, and each week I'll be webcasting to you from Judea, origin of the word Jew, a people besieged and beleaguered in every generation. Nazi Germany's but a memory, but in its place the world invented the Phantom Palestinians as this generation's internationally authorized Jew killers. Tune in for a different slant on life in Israel, Phantom Nation, every Monday.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Beyond the Matrix is sponsored by TorahLearningChannel.com, TorahLearningChannel.com, 24/6 Torah Learning, for your ability to grow to another level and to illuminate your neshama, your soul. You've got to tune into it. Go to TorahLearningChannel.com. It's available also on Roku if you're in the United States, and Amazon Fire. So don't miss the opportunity to elevate your soul. And it is also now available when you go to TorahLearningChannel.com in Portuguese and Spanish. And by the way, something you missed, Jerry, about our illustrious Rabbi Hausman. He also can kill you in five different ways. So,
yes, he's a master of Israeli, Filipino, and dirty fighting.
You've never been introduced like that, have you?
No, never. At the dojos where I train, they like to call me at my age, I'm the master of the old age disaster. So
master of disaster, that's a good one.
Yeah,
Rabbi,
yeah.
Look, let's start off by asking this, so the audience can know who you are. Tell the audience a little bit about your ordination and how you came to the place that you're at in a very secular environment. Now you come into you're very conservative in a secular world. How did you get to the place that you're at right now?
Well, geez. You know, I had a standard secular education like most people my age had growing up in the, I'm part of the baby boomer generation. Mm-hmm. So I went through, regular elementary school, middle school, high school, college, obviously, as everybody's heard. And on the other side of it, I had parents and grandparents, particularly my mother's folks, my maternal grandparents, whom I knew quite well. They passed away when I was well into my adulthood. Mm. And just formative influences on me when it came to, how I look at the world Jewishly. We had a Talmud Torah in the greater Bridgeport, Connecticut area, which was much more than a 3-day a week, 2 hours a day when you attended kind of educational enterprise. Mm-hmm. And it led to a number of us who were so interested. Now, this synagogue that hosted this, interestingly enough, was a conservative synagogue.
Interesting, yeah.
It was very interesting. But the rabbi at the time, who has since passed away, a guy named Jack Bloom, was at that particular moment in time, really focused on traditional education for the kids who were coming out of the synagogue. He didn't force us to keep kosher or any of that kind of stuff. But his feeling was always, listen, if you're going to shuck something, then you should know what you're discarding.
Right.
And he was uncompromising when it came to educational matters,
which is really important.
Yeah, without question. So, here I was, as a teenager growing up, having attended public high school, okay, I was studying Gemara. I was studying Talmud, in the Hebrew High program at this school, and which also led me to be involved with the Prosdor program, which was maintained out of the Jewish Theological Seminary, in a day where JTS, in my view, was graduating people of talent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, today, you don't want to know what I call JTS.
Yeah, that's all right.
But I will tell you that the quality of people who come out, by and large, certainly not of the caliber of a Ray Arts, a Max Arts, a Jack mm-hmm. Bloom, a Neil Gilman, and things of that sort. So I fell in with those kinds of people. And
you also have a huge influence in your grandparents. I mean, the background that you explained with your grandparents, you've got to mention that, because that is actually like the foundation stone.
My grandparents, my mother's folks were incredible people. My grandfather, interestingly, was trained as a blacksmith over in the old country. On this side of the family was the Ukraine. Vinnytsia was the town,
mm-hmm.
or the city. And the family came from Vinnytsia and a number of the Shtetlach, the small villages that surrounded Vinnytsia. And along with that, his father always wanted him to have a good Jewish background. So my grandfather had a Malamed come to teach him, and they were preparing it to send him off to Slobodka Yeshiva.
Wow.
But yeah, really. You imagine going up to Kovno in Lithuania, Kaunas today they call it.
It's not the modern day in which you take a plane and fly to Chicago.
Right? No.
No, not at all. So as a teenager, my grandfather, I used to go to shul with him, synagogue with him every Shabbos. And when I was reading Torah, this guy, and I started in all this by being a Saturday morning, Shabbat morning Torah reader. Mm-hmm. And my grandfather was always there. I would come off the bima. He would have his finger in the chumash, his finger in the Bible, without even looking. He would say to me, okay, let's talk about what you read here, and what does this word mean, and how does this put into context and Rosh? I ended up studying Mishnah with my grandfather.
That's beautiful.
I mean, it was just unbelievable. And the guy, I remember when my father died. This will tell you how brilliant this man was. When my father died in 82, my grandfather, he really hadn't studied any Gemara since, I don't know, 1908.
Wow.
So, you know?
Right.
The rabbi of the synagogue, the same synagogue where Jack Blum was the rabbi, then the rabbi who succeeded Jack Blum came to make a visit at the house. And my grandfather starts with him, well, rabbi, it says here in the Gemara and this Masach, then it says here, and if you go to, yeah, I mean, this is right. He said, Rashi says this here, and Tosafos says that there, and everything.
Total recall.
Yeah, wow. We're listening to this. My brother Matt and I are listening to this. Just our jaws dropped.
Right.
Absolutely dropped. This man, he hadn't spoken Russian in 65 years, ended up meeting up with a relative who ended up getting out of the Soviet Union. And here's my grandfather, 65 years later, speaking Russian.
Wow.
Ukrainian.
Right.
I mean, the man was just absolutely brilliant. His wife, my grandmother, you know, she, when it came to, she didn't have that kind of Jewish education, but when it came to a heart for Israel, this woman was just incredible. She worked for Mizrahi, raising money. Keren Kayemet Yisrael, mm-hmm. you know, the blue boxes that we used to have in our homes. She was just involved in all these kinds of things. And for her, it didn't make a difference if it was the religious Zionist or the labor Zionist. You know, just an independent Jewish polity had to come about. It had to be established.
Jerry?
Yoni, I want to jump in here. I want to bring you up to the point that makes you so unusual, and that is exercising free speech and hosting international speakers at something you dedicated in the memory of your parents, Erwin M. and Hinda Effelhausen, the so-called free speech forum at your synagogue in Massachusetts. How did that come about? What happened to it? Who were some of the speakers and the controversies involved?
Yeah, the controversy is what I'm interested in.
Well, listen, my parents raised my brothers and me to be classical liberals, as it were. You know, free exchange of ideas, truth will win out, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
That's the old school liberal.
Right. The old school liberal, which doesn't exist anymore. It just doesn't exist anymore. And it's interesting to see how those kinds of classical liberal ideas has morphed into modern day conservatism. And it's very interesting to see, you know, how this has played out. My parents were and my parents had a formative influence in terms of the establishment of this forum that existed, because my father was a highly decorated World War II veteran who, I mean, he didn't take grief. He didn't take guff from anyone. For those people who know, my mother was a Bergson girl. She was actually attended and helped with Bergson rallies and whatnot. My grandfather, my mother's father, and Jabotinsky knew one another. So, you know, it came to this kind of activism on behalf of the serf, with regard to the safety and security of the Jewish people in the state of Israel. It was very close to my heart and my family's heart. So when I came up here to Massachusetts, I was just looking to fill some dead time during the year with programming. And, you know, I called a friend of mine who was the sitting dean of the rabbinical school at the Jewish Theological Seminary. This was right after 9/11. Okay, can you come up for a Shabbaton and talk about faith in this era that we're now faced with? Okay, Christmas Eve was Erev Shabbat. You know, so I called a couple of yeshiva buddies of mine and said, listen, I don't want this to be where people will come to shul on Friday night or Saturday morning, and then everybody's going to go out, or you should pardon the old joke, Chinese food in a movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's put together some programming. So I had my Rosh Kollel come in. You imagine, as a conservative synagogue, I had a Rosh Kollel come in. Okay.
Wow.
We held two minyanim at the time, back to back, you know, taking place at the same time. So people could either go to what they were used to in the synagogue, or they could go to the Orthodox Mechitza Minyan, because I'm not inviting somebody in who would feel uncomfortable in my home.
Right.
It just wasn't going to happen. And that's how this all started. It just sort of morphed from there. And I called this a friend here, a friend there. And one thing led to another. So, you know, the roster of people who have spoken, and this ended up morphing into this free speech center. People couldn't get forms elsewhere in the greater Boston area, I would give them a form.
So let me ask you this.
And let me just say, okay, up here, that generally meant people who had centrist or, for the most part, right of center views couldn't find a place to speak.
Okay, so that now you've answered the question I was going to ask. I mean, what was the purpose behind making this? I mean, obviously, there was a vacuum. There was no place for a person in that position to be able to, you know, do free speech forum type of discussions or any
right.
subject that's fairly conservative. We are flat out of time, so we're going to have to come back after the break and sort of pick it up where we left off. We are interviewing right now Rabbi Jonathan Hausman, and a great interview. I really appreciate you, Jerry, bringing this guy on. Fantastic interview. I get so emotionally caught up in the whole thing. Don't go away. You're listening to Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk.
The Tamar Yona Show.
Tamar, she's sassy.
She's smart.
She's funny.
But she's also a real Jewish mother.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tamar Yona. And yes, I can be all of those things, but at Israel News Talk Radio, I'm here to bring you the news stories and guests that you may not hear anywhere else. Join me live on air Sundays, Mondays, and Tuesdays for the most unique and bold talk radio in Israel.
The Tamar Yona Show.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio.
And you're listening to Beyond the Matrix. I'm Rod Bryant along with Jerry Gordon and Rabbi Hausman. We've been talking about the work that he's been doing in Massachusetts. And interestingly enough, he started a forum which was about free speech. And my question to him before the break was, why free speech? You would think that in the United States there wouldn't be a problem with being able to have free speech, but you pretty much answered it. Why don't you go pick back up and discuss why the vacuum that took place in that area?
Well, it was very simple. People could come to the area, and you know, if you were centrist or right of center, and you're thinking, where could you go? You know, it's similar in many ways to what students are faced with on the college campuses.
Correct.
In the high schools today, too.
Correct.
You know, where if you hold, you know, a different point of view, okay, you're embarrassed, you're shouted down, things of that sort. And, you know, as I mentioned, this all really evolved quite by accident. I was just trying to fill a programming space. That's all I was, you know, and... You know, as I mentioned, you know, the old style classical liberal doesn't exist anymore. It's morphed into what we call conservatism.
Right.
So where did people go? So, you know, I just started to invite people in to speak at the synagogue, and the list of people just runs the gamut. I mean, from left to right.
Right.
And it's amazing. I've taken most of the grief because of the people that are right of center that I brought in.
Really?
But listen, I brought in Islam apologists to speak. You know, and the big issue was, and the big issue has always been with people who come in to speak, I wanted all my speakers to understand that the press was not invited. They would be speaking to a group of people, however many came to a program, okay, directly. Mm-hmm. No one got invitations unless they were pro-Israel, as I define pro-Israel. And they had to know that the audience would question and challenge.
And as long as
people understood that, speakers understood that, we were good to go.
Right. So was there a lot of dialogue challenge back from the audience?
Oh, when I brought in Wafa Sultan, you should have heard the dialogue challenge back. I mean, you know, you have to understand, this is a woman who stands, what, 4'10"? You know, and she really shook the foundations of Islamdom, the mm-hmm. Islamic world.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, she's out of Syria. She has this kind of background, speaks. She said to me that I spoke a wonderful Arabic. I looked at her. I said, well, you speak a wonderful Arabic.
Wow.
You know, who approaches this... Who approached her speech not solely just from, you know, Islam's religious point of view, as it were, but from the point of view of a woman who's a psychiatrist.
Wow.
So, you know, she got challenged she really got challenged. But Geert Wilders, another one of my person that I hosted, the founder and leader of the Freedom Party in the Netherlands, okay, he got challenged as well, okay? The first time I brought Alan Weston, I mean, he's spoken at my synagogue 5 times altogether. Mm. You know, it just depended on who came in and what the program was.
So, Rabbi, let me ask you this real quick, because this is really important. With this in mind, what did you learn that you would like to teach or tell the audience that's listening that's important for our particular age and time that we live in today? What is the most important takeout from that?
Be strong. Chazak ve'ematz, you know, in terms of the Torah, you know, be strong and don't be faint of heart.
Know the truth, probably.
Huh?
Know the truth.
Yeah, you know.
Right.
Right. You know, seek knowledge.
Right.
While you seek knowledge, seek truth. Don't be afraid to challenge. You know, people take a look at me as if I'm sort of hero. You know, I don't know.
You got a lot of pushback.
More foolish than anything else.
You got a lot of pushback from this. Who was it from?
Yeah. Well, some members of the synagogue board, of course.
Of course.
And I have a trimodal congregation. I got about a third right of center, a third left of center, a third right in the center.
Schizophrenic congregation.
And all I said to my congregants was this: listen, you don't have to agree with the speaker, but look at the people who are coming in to listen.
Right.
We really are turning the synagogue into an intellectual crossroads here in middle New England.
Wow.
And we became a center where people were asking to come in and speak.
Yoni, you and I have been engaged in a significant effort. It's called American Law for American Courts. And we achieved one victory in Florida. And perhaps you may have achieved other victories elsewhere, including in Texas. Why don't you talk about that experience as an indication of how things get done?
Also explain what the law is. That's really important because some people may not know.
Well, American Laws for American Courts has, it goes by a number of different names, as Jerry can tell you and tell the listening audience. But basically what this piece of legislation on the state level, this is a state initiative. What it was meant to do was to protect people's fundamental constitutional rights. Okay. You can have a business venture with somebody else here in the United States, and you can designate the law to be used in case of a contractual business disagreement. You want to use the laws of the state of Delaware, which happens to be very popular here in the United States. Terrific. You want to, use for arbitration purposes the laws of the province of Ontario? Great. You want to use Guatemala? You want to use Saudi Arabia? You want to use anything in the business, you know, from the business side? That's terrific. But when it came to fundamental constitutional rights that are protected by the First Amendment in particular, you know, as well as those amendments that deal with criminal evidentiary issues, okay, there has to be a standard, and it's very simple. The standard are those rights protected by the Constitution of the United States. So this effort was meant to deal with issues dealing with inheritance, divorce, child custody, those kinds of things. So that laws used to in litigation, we're talking about the state of Connecticut, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, the state of Alabama, the Commonwealth of Virginia, those kinds of things. Okay? Because the rights granted to people residing legally in the United States, citizens of the United States, appertain thereto.
Wow.
All right. And the religious context, not always the case where inheritance is inheritance or child custody was child custody.
Right. Jerry, you were going to ask another question, follow-up.
Well, it's really a follow-up question. Yoni, in the context of what you and I participated in, particularly in the state of Florida, who ironically opposed this valued law?
Those in opposition, listen, we found that we found that we had a lot of opposition from the panoply of the alphabet soup of Jewish self-defense organizations, like the ADL, the National Council of Jewish Women, organizations you would think that would be on the side of protecting fundamental constitutional rights.
On what grounds?
As I recall, and I could be wrong about this, because memory is a funny thing, okay, I think that the Zionist Organization of America happened to have been on our side with this in terms of the Jewish self-defense organizations out there.
That is correct.
Let me ask you, why?
It's very simple. The United States has a constitution under which the government functions.
Correct.
States have constitutions under which state governments function, okay, in concert with the Constitution of the United States. We have the Bill of Rights, which protects basic human rights and freedoms, okay? And it's very clear if you read what the founders of the constitutional system wrote, they all believe that these rights derived from God. They derived from the Almighty, you know, according to the secular foundational documents of this country.
Right.
And those are freedom of speech, freedom of worship, freedom of education, freedom to organize political parties, okay? And this is part of the milieu, the context in which the American Laws for American Courts developed to protect those kinds of things.
But I don't understand
here.
But I don't understand the opposition. I mean, this seems like to be a no-brainer. What were the grounds of your opposition?
Well, there were several things, but basically they were dealing with freedom of religion as if all religions are equal, you know. I don't know. There were.
I just find it amazing that it's Jewish defense organizations that were touting this. And I can't wrap my brain around it. I mean, I just can't. But let me ask you, how many states have adopted this?
It's very easy. It's very easy to be universalistic. It's very easy to be for all things if you don't know who you are and
Correct.
What you stand for.
Correct.
And listen, the Mishnah teaches, im ein ani li mili. If I'm not for myself, then who am I for? And listen, Jews here in the United States, 80% of Jews are not conversant with foundational Jewish texts.
Right.
You know, Judaism is particularistic. You know, this is not tikkun olam for all. Okay? It's not social justice for us. If social justice, tikkun olam, is the operative principle of Judaism, that's not what it's about.
Right.
So we have Jerry and I and Senator Alan Hayes from Florida, who was, listen, we have to give all credit to Senator Hayes.
Right, right. This is a very profound statement that you made. Is you have to know who you are before you can defend what you want and where you're going in life. And this has been very profound. So we're going to come back after the break. I really want to get onto this sort of focus that you have that I wouldn't have expected, and that is the protection of persecuted Christians. And how did you come into that whole thing? Very interesting. Don't go away. You're listening to Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Hello, I am Walter Bingham. If you want to hear the news behind the news and the true perspective on world affairs, then the Walter Bingham File is the program for you. We bring you interviews with the movers and shakers, political commentaries, and on-the-spot reports of events as they happen. All here every Tuesday, 4 p.m. Israel time, 9 a.m. Eastern time. And it's all archived on our website. Make it a date.
Welcome back to Beyond the Matrix here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Matrix. We'd love to hear from you. As a matter of fact, the other day someone wrote Jerry and I a very nice comment. Maybe later on we can mention who the guy's name is, but really appreciate your comments and questions that you ask, and just the attaboys make us feel real good. We really appreciate it. Once again, we're back with Rabbi Hausman. Jerry, why don't you go ahead and take it into the segment?
Yoni, you had a controversy back in 2016.
Yeah, boy, did we.
And how could you, can you tie that in with your co-founding of something called Saving Persecuted Christians?
Sure. What people should know is that the speaker series was not just generally one-off speakers. Oftentimes I would assemble panels for, you know, kind of seminars, as it were. Back in 2014, I had a summit entitled the Israel Security Summit. And my guests were, my guest speakers were Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, father of Delta Force, former Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence, along with him, Lieutenant General Tom McInerney, former Air Force Vice Chiefs of Staff, one of the most decorated fighter pilots the country's ever produced. Gary Burnson, who's a former CIA station chief, set up the Hezbollah desk. My MC was Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, former Congressman Alan West. What ended up happening a couple years later, I put together another summit in 2016 that was basically entitled National Security Chaos. Are we past the tipping point? Now, this summit originally was scheduled to take place in July, but you know, in order to put everybody's schedule together, we couldn't get it done until November. And speakers again were General Boykin, Frank Gaffney, former Deputy Secretary of Defense in the Reagan administration and founder of the Center for Security Policy, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann. Okay. And the event was picketed. We had protesters in front of the synagogue. There were people who came down from the Islamic Society of Boston, people who were sent in from the Council of American Islamic Relations, and they were all, they joined a number of rabbinical students from Boston's Hebrew College, outside protesting. And a number of our people ended up going outside, and we invited them to come into the synagogue. No, they rather had protested outside. And General Boykin went outside to invite these people to come in as well.
So it was not an atmosphere of hostility from you guys. You guys were like very open to them coming in and listening.
We were very open and whatnot. The media did not portray any of this well. There were a number of gotcha interviews on TV and radio interview. The Jewish press, the forwards, condemned. The Massachusetts Board of Rabbis circulated a petition condemning the event. When all was said and done, about 200 clergy in the greater Boston area, Jewish and non-Jewish clergy, signed this, including three pastors from the town of Stoughton, in which I live, whom I've never met to this day. I wouldn't know these three women if I fell over them. Okay, signed a petition. Okay, never spoke to me. You know, the president of the Massachusetts Board of Rabbis at the time, I offered to meet with him. I said, listen, before you issue any kind of statement, how about if I bring to you all the material regarding the program? Okay, so you can see what this is about. And nope, it's Islamophobic. I said, it's not Islamophobic. We're going to talk about, I said, listen, we're going to talk about immigration to be sure, religious observance to be sure, but we're going to talk about economics. We're going to talk about the military. We're going to talk about a whole host of things. I mean, I got some economics in my graduate school background. I was going to focus on the issue of debt and deficit spending. Nope. So I really took it on the chin. The Southern Poverty Law Center at the time listed me as the most hateful rabbi in America. Okay. So disgusted were some of my friends who were pastors that a couple of us in conversations back and forth, and General Boykin was one of these because people should know that he's also an ordained minister, okay, came upon the idea, well, what ends up happening? Well, the discussion, well, what ends up happening for somebody who's similarly situated as I am? You know, how do we give somebody some comfort and some support? And that led into the formation of a group called Faith Leaders for America. Okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm. non-denominational, trans-denominational, non-religious, as it were, covered a whole bunch of, there are pastors in there, there are a few of us rabbis involved with this and whatnot. Because listen, you know, how do you engage? How do you protect one another? How do you show support and some sipuk nefesh, you know, some validation for what you do, you know, for the right reasons, not the wrong reasons. And, you know, there's not one hateful guy in a bunch or gal in a bunch. So what ended up happening is within the conversations there, it started to morph into, you know, this is not just what's happening here in the United States, but, you know, look at, and it all started from a comment that I made, which was, you know, we Jews, we're the alarm clocks of the world.
Right, right.
So somebody said, well, what do you mean? I said, listen, historically, it's very clear. What starts with the Jews never, ever, ever, ever ends with the Jews.
Correct.
Ever. It's just a sine qua non of Jewish history. So somebody said, yeah, you know, the state of Israel. I said, you talk about something that was needed. They said, yeah, you know, what was the Jewish population, you know, in the Middle East in 1948? And I said, well, roughly there was a population exchange, as it were, 650,000 Arabs. Okay, 800,000 Jews ended up switching places. Now, granted, I'm distilling history down to it's almost an obscene level, okay? But that's basically what ended up happening. And now, just, well, look at what's happening with the indigenous Christian populations in the Middle East.
Right.
And I said, listen, Christians are not just endangered in the Middle East. Look at throughout the world. Look at how Christians are treated in Pakistan. Look at how Christians are treated in North Korea. Look at how Christians, the church is treated in Cuba. Look at Venezuela.
Turkey.
I said, this is not just a, I said, if you're taking a look at a Middle East problem and maybe the heart of the Middle East, this is greater than that.
Right.
So the discussions ended up morphing into, well, what can we do? What can we do? And somebody said, geez, you know, I wish there was a model that could be used. And there was a model, and the model was the SSSJ, the Student Struggle for Soviet Jewry.
Ah, interesting. Okay. That's a good one. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, isn't it?
I mean, brilliant.
You have to understand that this was a movement. The SSJ was a movement that was founded, if I remember correctly, in 1964, okay, by a couple of people, all right, in the basement of a synagogue in Cleveland, as a matter of fact.
Wow.
Okay. To be a grassroots movement to liberate Jews from the Soviet Union.
And the power of two people, think about this, changed the world.
Yeah, I think it was four altogether once all was said and done. Okay, but right. I mean, it started with one guy who ended up bringing it to, who was the good, Jacob Birnbaum, I think the guy's name was, okay? Brings it to a bunch of people from, there were students together in at Columbia University. It was Arthur Green and a few others. And it was meant to bring pressure to bear on the organized Jewish institutions of the day. The alphabet soup of the Jewish self-defense organizations.
Who was quite comfortable with status quo.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So what
let's and it led to, I'll tell you, so successful was this movement. Okay. I mean giants of the day ended up becoming involved. Moshe Dechter and Avram Joshua Heschel, and there was Meir Rosen, who was Israel's diplomat. I think he was Israel's ambassador to the UN, and the list goes on and on and on. What ended up happening was, it ends up catching the eye of Representative Vanek and Senator Scoop Jackson, who turned it into the Jackson-Vanek amendment, withholding most favored nation trading status with the Soviet Union. Okay, Shlomo Carbach wrote the great Jewish solidarity anthem, Am Yisrael Chai. Mm-hmm. You know, Am Yisrael, right. Am Yisrael, Am Yisrael Chai. That comes out of this movement, and it ended up taking off like a shot, particularly once some members of Congress got a hold of this.
Now, Rabbi, I'm gonna have to pause you there for a second, because we actually have 2 minutes for you to describe what is your goal for persecuted Christians.
Well, the goal is very simple. It's to raise the profile of this issue in America generally and within the indigenous Christian communities here in the United States, because pastors aren't even speaking out about this.
So they need to get a hold of their congressman, is what you're saying?
Regular churchgoers need to bring this issue to the attention of their pastors. All right. People at synagogue should bring this issue to the attention of their rabbis, to be honest with you. This is not just a Christian issue. This is you want to talk about human rights, this is a true human rights issue. Right. And that should involve us all. I ended up getting involved because as a teenager I was involved with the SSSJ down in Connecticut.
Right. And look, you can see pictures right now from Africa of hundreds of Christians being burnt alive, put in graves, shot in graves. There's a Holocaust going on right now.
The news, well, I wouldn't use the term Holocaust because I think that's particular to our experience. But you're absolutely right. There's a conflagration taking place. Right. Okay, there's a targeted population. Look at the news that just came out of Nigeria this morning.
Right.
You know,
it is. Look, we have had a great interview. Let's please have you back on the show so we can continue to talk about the success of what you're doing and also the success of being able to bring the knowledge up. The next show we have you back on, I would like to talk specifically on a plan, how you would like to see this laid out. You've been listening to Beyond the Matrix, and we really appreciate you listening, and we'll say shalom for now.
This is Rita from League City, Texas, now living in Israel. And though my heart may have belonged to Texas, it now belongs to Israel and all the fantastic show hosts at Israel News Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Michael Solomon from Kiryat Arba, Israel. And why do I love listening to Israel News Talk Radio? Because I love listening to the interesting interviews they do and their news reporting that most other media sources don't cover.
Hey, this is Nicole Eko from Malmo, Sweden. It gets pretty cold here in Sweden, so I love cuddling up with a warm cup of tea while I listen to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, this is Frank Karras from Tennessee. Me and my dog Buster really love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising at israelnewstalkradio.com.
Straight talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.